It's the CougarFan.com Rising Shot Podcast, episode 375, and I'm your host, Adam Mangum. Matt's on vacation, so I chat this week with Jerem Jordan of BYU Sports Nation fame. We talk about Dave Rose's legacy, the potential for this year's football team, and we take a trip down memory lane to talk about the 1999 national champion men's volleyball team. This is the CougarFan.com Rising Shot Podcast. Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. You can email us at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com, and you can listen to my discussion with Jerem Jordan right now. Welcoming back to the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, Jerem Jordan of BYU Sports Nation. What's up, Jerem?
It is great to be back, Adam. It's been a while. I was a little offended when you guys did like a 99 volleyball team podcast, and I wasn't involved in that. But other than that, things are great.
Well, I will tell you, spoiler alert, I'm going to ask you about the 1999 men's volleyball team.
Oh, sweet. Okay, good. I have every Mac Wilson answer ready
yes.
to go.
Yes, all right, cool. So we'll get to that in a second. But before that, are you a Stranger Things fan?
Oh, huge Stranger Things fan.
So have you, and we won't do any spoilers, have you binge-watched season 3 yet? Are you done? Are you in the middle? Where are you at?
Adam. I was on vacation. It came out at 12:01 a.m.
Yes.
On the Pacific Coast where I was. And I watched it with my sister-in-law and her friends. There were like 20 of us in the house, you know, but the three of us stayed up until 7:30. We watched the whole season in a row. Almost as fast as you can watch it. Yeah.
Wow.
I've seen it.
Wow. I was on vacation, but I was in a cabin by Yellowstone with very bad Wi-Fi and no cell phone service. And so I didn't attempt what you were trying, but I did one night. I was up late. I'm like, oh, I bet I can stream it. I couldn't get it to it. So I'm only on episode 3. So no spoilers.
Oh, you're in for a treat. Yeah, exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited. The first three episodes have been pretty cool. I mean, I can't believe they killed everybody in episode 3. I don't know what they're going to do. I'm just kidding, everybody. They didn't kill everybody.
Yeah, when that nuclear bomb went off, that was wild.
I was like, whoa, it's Red Dawn all over again.
Just kidding.
You know?
There's a spoiler-free environment. You're right. Everyone just chill.
Yeah. We're not going to spoil anything. So I wanted to get your take. Dave Rose did an interview with Jay Drew was in the Salt Lake Tribune not too long ago. Lots of stuff in there, but I was just – there are like two things in there that I was curious to get your take on as somebody that, you know, covered that team and interviewed Dave Rose on multiple occasions. The first one is legacy. So Rose has been always very hesitant to talk about legacy, right, as a lot of coaches when they're in their job, though he seemed a little bit willing to do that in the interview with Jay Drew. But from your perspective, what is Dave Rose's legacy? I mean, it was interesting to read about some of his take and when he retired, there were some, you know, articles and things out. But what's your take in 5-10 years from now? How will BYU fans and others look back on Dave Rose's tenure as the head coach at BYU?
I think the first thing that will come to mind is that he had a team that went to the Sweet 16 and had the National Player of the Year. I think Jimmer is the core part of his legacy, that he got a guy that had, what, 3 scholarship offers, I think, BYU, Utah, and Siena, and a 6'2 white kid from Glens Falls, New York, to lottery pick, National Player of the Year, Sweet 16. I think that we're not going to sit here and go, but those last 4 years, when the dust settles. I mean, right now it's kind of fresh and it's like, well, maybe it was a good change given everything that happened and whatnot. But when it all said and done, the dude had like 8 at-large bids for the NCAA tournament. Are you kidding me? There were conference championships in the regular season, which is like impossible in the West Coast Conference, given how good Gonzaga is. I think that we're going to revere Dave Rose for a long time here. He's certainly not a Stan Watts Basketball Hall of Fame kind of figure in that way, but what Dave Rose did, I don't think will ever be replicated. The winning percentage at home, 88%, 70% winning percentage overall, like I don't think that Mark Pope can do that. Pope can do some things that Dave Rose did not, but I don't think that he can overall with the win percentages at home and overall and produce a National Player of the Year. Like, Okay, top that, you know?
I mean, the legacy is pretty remarkable. So to draw a correlation, so you don't, when you think of Lavelle Edwards, go, well, he was 6-6 in his last season, you know,
Exactly.
pretty
Yeah.
mediocre
No,
end.
I don't. That was a trunky end, right? Yeah.
That was not a great end, but a couple of fun games at the end of that season.
Certainly.
So hitting on Pope, no, I'll stay on Rose for a second. We'll get back to Pope. The other one that came up was, because J. Drew always asks tough questions, is came up the NCAA stuff that unfortunately kind of hit at the end of the tenure, and Rose kind of dodged it. You know, the appeal is still ongoing, and quite frankly, I doubt he wants to really talk about it at all. But one of the things that came out was, you know, he talked about his close relationship with Jackson Emory and just the close relationship with the Emory family. You think, and it seemed pretty clear in the interview that he had no regrets in trying to help Nick out in a tough situation. As far as the legacy is concerned, is that also something that you think 5, 6, 7 years from now just becomes a side note? Or do you think that's just a mark that unfortunately, because of the timing of it and what happened, and if the wins never get replaced, it'll just kind of unfortunately hang there a little bit when you talk about Rose's tenure at BYU?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't think it's going to be one of the first three or four things mentioned. I mean, perhaps I've got my blue goggles on in that opinion, but I think because of the details that came out with what happened with Nick, that they were not egregious compared to whatever else is going on in college basketball and what the FBI has unscathed, where it's like six-figure amounts, and Nick got like his broken rules were broken rules, no doubt, but the severity of them dims in comparison to what we see and hear among many other collegiate athletes at a high level. And so for me, that dims it somewhat. And I feel like BYU was made an example of because of BYU's kind of glossy, clean, image that it puts out and wants to be known for, right? So I guess for me, that's not one of the top things that I'll think of. In fact, I had kind of forgotten it until you mentioned that, but I could see how, on the outside, that might be perceived as something big. And frankly, these situations where wins are vacated and many times, do any of us really feel like Reggie Bush wasn't the Heisman Trophy winner? That
No.
USC didn't win you know what I mean?
No.
Like, it happened, it's over, it's whatever. The 2003 men's volleyball national championship or semifinal or whatever, you know, Lewis beats BYU, Lewis vacated that title. I don't go, oh, I feel better. You know, like it's whatever. It doesn't really matter to me. And by the way, BYU they have technically are keeping those wins and record as is until they're told that they didn't win the appeal or not. So what we did on the Dave Rose Coaches Show last year, that I produced, is we kept the record what it is until they tell us otherwise. And now that he's retired, will they finish the appeal? I would hope so, but it's been a while. Like, let's figure something out, right?
Well, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, if you talk about Dave Rose, his wins, you're gonna end up talking about the actual total, right? I mean, it's stupid to talk about
Yeah.
anything else, even if they
I
lose
don't
the
even
appeal.
know the adjusted numbers. I have no idea what
Yeah,
they are.
who
I
cares?
don't even care. Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You know, Emory last year obviously struggled, wasn't as big of a factor as he had been previously. With all the changes that have happened to that roster and Yoli coming back and all this, do you think Nick Emory's going to be a more meaningful part of the team in his last season, or do you think, maybe at this point with Toulson and some of the other factors, that he'll probably be, like last year, maybe the 7th or 8th guy on this team?
Another great question. I'm not exactly sure what to expect from him, and frankly, I'm expecting nothing, just so if he does do something, I go, oh, okay, that's great. I really wanted Nick to be Nick, and it was a tough season. It
Yeah,
really was.
really
With
was.
the suspension and going through a divorce, he recently got remarried, which is fantastic, and that's great news for him. Hopefully there's some stability in that. There's some stability in the new coaching staff, and that being one of the eight seniors, six on scholarship, that he finds a place on this team. It's kind of weird, right? Because you want Connor Harding to develop and become this guy that I think could be a first team all conference kind of player his junior and senior year. But I think it'd be at the cost of Nick Emery. So right. what do you do there, right? Do you have two guys that can, because to me, they're kind of playing the same spot. But and Jesse Wade in the mix, right? But yeah, I think you always got some options, but they need to find just like eight dudes that can do it, right? Is it six of those are seniors, and it's Gavin Baxter and Connor Harding, and that's kind of your group. We shall see in this. Trevin Nell, what do you do with him? And what do you do with some of these other newcomers, if anything? But it's exciting that BYU has a little bit of perceived depth with Gilly Childs coming back and Jake Toulson. You have a big three, like three guys that could score 20 in a game at any point, and we haven't felt that way in a few years. It was exciting when it was Jimmer, Jackson, and Tyler Hawes, right? And you thought, hey, we got three dudes that can knock down a shot or get to the rim at any point.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. So let's move on to football for a second. We got a couple of tweet bag questions from listeners, including, and I believe you know of Mr. Sweeney, Justin Sweeney. I think he sends questions.
Oh, he is sure.
He
is the right. Yeah, he's the best.
He's the best. So Justin asked this, true or false, BYU could start the football season 0-4 and still be a good team. Follow up, if this happens, how do they stay focused and not end up with one or two wins? So, Jerem, is that a true statement, true or false? You could start 0-4 and BYU could still be a pretty good team.
False. There's no good teams that are 0-4. I don't care if you lose by one in all those games. Losers talk about margin of loss. If you lose the first four, you could think that you are close, but you lost. I could see how, okay, you take some confidence from that, but if BYU starts 0-4, they are toast mentally, toast. Emotionally. They'll be toast physically by the end of the fourth game. It's going to take a bye week or two to really get kind of back into it. I am bugged beyond belief about how tough that's going to be, right, for this group. I think this, if BYU played two Power 5 teams this year, I would say, you know what, they have a chance at 10. But instead I say, okay, 8's the goal.
Yeah.
I'm not saying play two Power 5. 3 would be fine. 4 is fine if you can break it up, but if they're all in a row, it's like, that's just, it's death row. It's not like BYU's playing Indiana, Vanderbilt, Oregon State, and Kentucky. Like, that would be different. And in 2021, BYU's going to play 7 Power 5s. And 4 or 5 of those are kind of those, like, on par with BYU games, right? But when you have Utah's not on par with BYU, right? They're at a different level, yet BYU's played them close. And then at Tennessee, that's a tough game, but that's a winnable game. Tennessee's been the second-worst SEC team the last 2 years. USC could be a 10-win team in a blink of an eye, yet they went 5-7. Hopefully they're the that's a winnable game. And then Washington is really good every stinking year. They reload. Like, I expect that to be a tough one in week four. So.
Well,
yeah, I could see how you could argue, well, BYU is good. They played them tough. Losers talk about margin of loss. Winners do not discuss margin.
Well, and in the end, like, if you think of the best seasons in BYU history, if you ranked them, you're not gonna rank a 6-win season in that, right? Despite the fact that their marginal loss was good and the computers had them ranked highly, right? In the end, it can't be a special season. It can't even be a really good season if you start 0-4. So I agree with you.
Well, let's look at last year. So in the S&P ratings, which I value a lot, I like in basketball, we have all these metrics to give us an idea of where a team fits outside of the top 25, because I'm pretty much done with the poll. Those are just the opinion. Those are based in like nothing, perception, tradition. Like, they're just garbage.
Right.
I like metrics like KenPom in basketball to give us a sense of how good a team is using what they actually do, not what you think they are doing or you didn't watch the game or pay attention. In football, there's stuff like Sagarin, S&P, and so on. Last year in BYU football was 43 in the S&P. You're telling me that 7-6 team was 4-3? Perhaps they were, but no one knows or really cares, right? The bottom line is, how many games do you win? Who did you beat? When did you do it? How did you do it, right? So BYU's got to win 10 plus to have a season that really matters. In most, you could have singular moments, but you always get to have a season where we go, hey, see, independence, awesome. Like Taysom Hill gets hurt a couple times. Those are probably seasons that would have done it, but they didn't happen. So we're generally frustrated by that and not no top 25 at the end of the year and no beating Utah. It all kind of blends together. But one season like that can change how you feel very quickly.
Yeah, very quickly. And that leads to our next question is from Jared Nielsen. That's at the Vitman one. I can never get his handle right. It doesn't matter. He says, summer optimism has me thinking this could be a special season. If we can sustain a few great seasons, can winning overcome the exclusionary bigotry that will keep us out of the P5 promised land? Hashtag, can winning cure all ills? Hashtag, tweet back. I'm going to rephrase it a little bit for you. I'm going to put it in a buy or sell type of phrase, and you tell me if you buy or sell this statement. Winning, BYU consistently winning equals a spot in a P5 conference, football conference. Buy or sell that statement?
Sell. Yeah, I don't agree with it. It can certainly get you on the map. And I looked up a couple weeks ago, all the teams that were outside the Power Five, and I include the Big East in that, most of those teams had a season that validated their being included in that. Not everyone did, right? Boise State didn't get an invite. Hawaii didn't get an invite, and so on. Rutgers, I don't think, ever went to a Fiesta Bowl since the Big East had the auto bid and whatnot. It certainly helps, but there are complications to BYU's inclusion that could be stumbling blocks unless I think BYU bites the bullet a little bit. TV situation is one. LGBTQ plus groups will continue to knock on that door and protest probably against BYU. The conservative nature of BYU relative to how the Pac-12 operates specifically with Stanford and Cal, that's been going on since the 60s. I think those will be issues that are going to be more than football. I think Boise State's a good example, right? They're really good at football, yet no one cares because of TV market, and they just have one program, right? If BYU gets into a Power Five, perhaps it could be football only at some point. I don't know. I really hope it happens, but I'm kind of thinking it might not happen ever.
Like, yeah,
if it hasn't happened now, why would it happen just because someone wants to expand to 16? Who wants to share? Obviously, no one wants to share. No one wants to share. Look at the AAC might not even share
right.
with their new TV deal.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? Like,
yeah.
it is dry out there, and we are looking for water and not finding it. But BYU is fine for now, but I don't know that this is going to work forever. I think BYU needs to, if they don't get invited to a P5 initially, wait for the aftershock, see if anything happens. BYU could always be independent, always be with ESPN, always have BYU TV. But obviously the goal is Power 5 inclusion, and I just think it's tough. I really hope BYU gets in, but I don't expect it, frankly.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, if we didn't get in the 80s, I mean, if winning is the answer, then the 80s should have put BYU in a Power 5, right? I mean, that was...
I guess the landscape was different.
The landscape was very
so divided.
Different.
Penn State and Florida State are independents themselves for a long time, right? You could be Air Force and be in the top 10. You could be BYU and win the national title. That's impossible now, right? To even make the playoffs. A New Year's Six would be the ultimate goal, right? But with these schedules, that ain't happening.
No,
like
no.
It's hard enough to win 10 games, let alone win all of them, right?
Yeah,
and in 2014, BYU had a shot because they played three Power Fives, and only one was in the top 25 at the time. That was Texas. They went 8-5.
Yeah, it's going to be all those things are tough, and we'll see at the end. Well, let me get you out on the volleyball team 1999. So we did a whole podcast on it, and the advantage we have, though there's not a lot on the internet, by the way, to do research on that 1999 men's volleyball national championship team, right? There's a few things here and there, but a lot of it came from Matt and I's memory because we were there and we watched that team. So
yeah, you and Darnell Dixon.
That's right. That's right. that's right. So we and it was fun. It was a blast to participate as a fan watching that team. So what are your thoughts on that 1999 team? We put it as one of the best six BYU sports teams in history, and it was our, I would say, our most controversial choice. Some people wanted the more recent women's volleyball team that didn't win the championship, but obviously women's volleyball's got a lot more teams at the Division I level, so it's in some ways is a bigger feat. Competitively speaking, other people said, well, that's nice, but there's what, there were like 40 teams or maybe less in 1999, so who cares? You should put one of the other football teams on there. Do you consider them one of the best BYU sports teams in history? And obviously, you and I are both biased because we're significant fans of men's volleyball at the college level.
I am not biased whatsoever. I've only called the matches for 11 years, Adam. I don't know what you're talking about.
Right. You don't care about men's volleyball at all.
I don't. Those no. Those guys aren't any good, and I don't care about them. The 1999 team, men's volleyball, BYU, one of the greatest BYU teams ever. You guys are absolutely correct to have it there. They lost one match all year. It was a tight one, right? And they got a rematch and beat Long Beach State in the final, right? Which is incredible. So awesome at UCLA. That team was star-studded. That team, by the way, that was the 10th year of being an NCAA-sanctioned men's volleyball team. BYU was garbage the first, 5 years. And then that senior class with Ryan Miller and Asi Antonetti brought it home, and they had the original LeBron on the team, Hector LeBron, leading them to the title, et cetera. And no, that team is amazing. I was 16. I lived in West Jordan. I drove down for, I think, two or three matches that year because I would watch them on TV and I wanted to see them in person, and it was just magical. That team was so dominant and so good, and there are records that those guys set that will never be touched, and they're the gold standard. 01 and 04 know it. Volleyball Magazine a few years ago did the top five teams all time, and BYU was in the top five of volleyball teams all time. That team, it was so good. You guys are absolutely right to have them as one of the greatest ever.
I agree with everything you said. It was a special season. They were amazing to watch, and the benefits of having participated as a fan, right, in that season is I can talk about just how dominant. I mean, the numbers back you up, but and then just the effect that that team had on campus of basically from that day forth, every year you read some quote from some opposing player, and you've interviewed them and talked to opposing players and coaches, and they all talk about how crazy it is to play there because of the intensity of the fans, right? That did not, I went to men's volleyball games the few seasons prior to that. That was not the case. Right, it was a good crowd, but 99 was the year where that just took off, and has had a life of its own and been true for most seasons since then. Right, so it started something which most of a lot of other seasons can be one-off seasons, but it really started BYU as a power player in that sport.
Oh yeah, I love talking to alumni from that team, and before Carl McGowan passed, being able to talk to him about those teams and what they build, and it's just magical. BYU, you're right. BYU is still riding the wave of momentum from that specific team to this day,
20 years later.
and 20 years later, and BYU is trying to replicate what they did, right? And there's still systems in place that BYU uses that Carl McGowan put in the 80s that culminated in its greatest team in 99, and BYU wins in 01 and 04 and came really close in 03 and 13 and 14 and 16 and 17, right? And
Right.
frankly, I every time I call a match, I look up at those banners and think, ah, BYU needs to put one more up there. And they've been really close, and BYU will go into the top into this season, probably in the top three. They really struggled this year, but this was the redshirt year, if you will. This is like the Warriors season they're about to have, where it's like, oh, it's wide open. That was last year. Long Beach State and Hawaii were amazing. They won it. Well, now it's open season because a lot of those players are gone to both those teams, and BYU's got a shot.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Jerem, thanks for joining the show. Always a Pleasure to have you on, and especially, to talk volleyball, because most of our guests, I don't think, really care that much. They should, but I don't know that they do. So, you're on a different
Hey,
level, man.
all good.
And you watch
Yeah.
Stranger Things straight through from midnight to 7 a.m. Hats off to you on that. I'm too much of an old man to pull that
I'm getting too old for that, but
one
yeah, my hammies are tired from playing flag football last night. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm getting into my upper 30s and I'm not old,
Oh,
but I'm
dude. Yeah,
starting to
the
feel
upper
like it.
30s, man. I'm telling you, be careful. That's when the injuries happen, man.
But I can
That's
only
when.
play pickup for so long.
Yeah, that's when you have to start pacing yourself. If you get to hour two, it's time to call it, man. From personal
Yeah.
experience. Well, anyway, thanks, Jeremy. We'll have you on again soon.
Adam, thank you.